There we go. Let's get that music playing. Andy Griffin live. We have Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show coming on. It's Elder Care Radio with Richard and Kaylee. Guys, take it away.
Hello. Welcome, everybody, to Elder Care Radio, brought to you by Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. It's always exciting to be here, and I feel like you're in the room with us as we talk and share information with you.
Even though you're not calling in and leaving messages for us to answer, but it is, we do appreciate being here and being able to share information. And as we constantly are looking for, you know, relatable content, things that we think are important, you know, we come across some studies, but and we've got a couple of those that we want to talk about today. But on the way to the studio this morning, we had a conversation with a gentleman, and you know, his concerns were real, and I just wanted to bring those up and kind of talk him through. You know, his parents are going through some
changes.
Yeah, some changes, and having some issues, and he's trying to find solutions, and you know, some things that he said just reminded me that everybody should keep this in mind. He is going to the doctor's appointments with his parents now, because when you really think about it, we all expect our parents to be able to handle everything for us, but as we age, that burden becomes much harder, and at some point we have to take on that administrative role, maybe.
And I'm not sure we can tolerate the stress quite as much. So, you know, if a wife is going with her husband who is ailing, there's so much emotion in the information being received that sometimes the questions get lost or forgotten before we leave the appointment.
Right, and so we've always been proponents of having people with you at those meetings so that you can get good information. If you have more people listening for more things and bringing up questions, it's going to be a much more productive meeting with your doctor. So if you have parents who are in that position where they may have some health issues and are struggling, try and go to the doctor with them. Listen, get as much information as you can. If there are questions that you feel are unanswered, that is an indication that questions should be asked. Go ahead and ask those of the doctor. Make sure that there's clarity, because what we found for most people is that the doctors will give them the information they're given, and they may not get all of the answers to those questions. You know, they may not even gather all that information, much less the information the doctor wasn't really forthcoming with. But in our experiences with so many people, they are always surprised by the information that they didn't know that was available.
And information is so readily available today with technology as advanced as it is. However, maybe you're not feeling as confident as you could feel using the internet. Make sure you search out the questions that are appropriate for your condition when you're going in, or have your spouse or a child do that for you. And if you're struggling to find the appropriate questions dealing with your conditions, give our office a call. We'd love to help you have appropriate questions so that you can get the information you're looking for. And our office number is 435-477-6999.
So if your parents are having problems, if they're under stress, then step in and help them relieve some of that stress, and maybe get a lot more answers to questions. This week in hospice, I'm just going to toss this out. We had some people that had no idea what their condition was, and we had no idea that they had no idea. And so we had some conversations that were a little more blunt than maybe they should have been, and we feel bad about that. But the truth is, that information had to get put out there, and we were surprised. Our doctor was surprised that their doctor hadn't given them any of that.
We've said it before that you do have to ask the questions that you want the answers to, because most of our physicians will wait until you're ready to receive the information, especially if the information isn't good news. If there's a terminal illness or a chronic condition or something that's just going to severely impact your life, imagine how difficult that would be as the doctor to have to say, hey, I've got nothing for you on this one. It's a difficult conversation, and if they don't believe that you're ready to hear those words, they may not share it with you if you don't ask the appropriate questions. But with the family that Richard was just discussing, while the information may have been, you know, the complications were discussed that led them to an understanding of the condition, in the end, they were so grateful that they had that information. While we would have preferred to share it just maybe a little bit more softly. You know, just assuming, I mean, this was a condition that they had been dealing with for 10 years. How do you not know, right? Yeah. So it was assumed that they knew, but in the end, so very grateful that they finally knew. And it answered so many questions for them. In the back of my head, I thought, well, if you had questions, why didn't you ask? You know, but they just trusted that their physician would tell them if they needed to know.
But one of the things that happened in that circumstance was they were going back to the doctor regularly and being tested, but there was no action being taken. And they thought, well, they're just trying to figure out the next action to take. Now, they had gone through chemotherapy and other things, and then they had stopped that. So at that point, they took it as, okay, so the doctor's finding something new, although they had been going to the doctor over and over and over again and taking blood tests, and the doctor said, okay, well, then, you know, we'll see you in 3 months. That needs to be an indicator that when the doctors aren't coming up with new solutions immediately, right, that there may be no new solutions.
And in their defense, they believed that the three-month visits were to make sure that nothing reappeared and that they continued to be in a stable condition. But in fact, they were actually monitoring growth. So in that case, it was a complete opposite of what they believed the appointments were for.
Right. So be better aware, take control of your medical care, and be involved with your parents' medical care. Those would be the takeaways. So in doing research and finding things out, you know, sometimes you start asking questions and looking, and you really go down the rabbit hole. And as I'm going through this, I found out, this was kind of an interesting fact that I didn't know. And I'm surprised that of all the medical people we deal with, they've never told me that either, because it's kind of an unusual fact. And that is, when we are born, we humans start with four kidneys.
What?
Did you know that? We start with four kidneys. And then as we grow and age and get older, two of those kidneys become adult knees.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Kaylee and I bought it hook, line, and sinker, and we now both feel really bad.
There's evidence that we don't pre-rehearse these shows.
the real part of this, in doing these studies, it's interesting to find out that, you know, new information is based on old information, but it's important that we get the current information. So the first one that we want to talk about was about blood pressure cuffs. I think we all can imagine they come in different sizes, and that makes sense, but how important is different sizes, and why are there different sizes? Is it just a matter of comfort? Is it because, you know, when you have a big arm, maybe it doesn't reach all the way around? No, actually, your blood pressure cuff size has a huge impact.
Huge impact on
the reading that you're going to get.
And I think this was a little enlightening to Richard as well. You can't see him. Those of you who already know him know that he's 6'4", and not an overweight guy, but a big guy. He's 6'4", in his body.
He's just a little guy. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he's tiny.
Well, on every scale for my height, I'm overweight. I just
when it comes to cuff size, you know, you just assume that when you go to the doctor, they're using the appropriate cuff size. So finding these studies and research was, I think, enlightening. Was it not, Richard?
So this study was actually presented just this month, the 1st of March, 2022. And it was at the American Heart Association's Epidemiology, Prevention, Lifestyle, and Cardiometabolic Health Conference in Chicago. And that's, they presented this information. They've done all the study. And it's important to understand how much cuff size makes a difference. And the study was actually done at using those automatic cuffs that they use at doctor's offices. Mm-hmm. And they started, you know, checking this, and the ones you use at home also. And if they measured somebody who had a large arm with a cuff that was designed for somebody with a regular size arm.
Standard, right.
They had a 39% false reading, right? 39% of them ended up with being declared as hypertensive when they're not.
Wow.
39% of those people. And if they used a cuff that was too big on somebody who had a smaller arm, 22% of the time they misdiagnosed it also. And they gave some examples. So somebody who needed an extra large cuff and used a regular size cuff, they had a reading of 143/86. And for those of us who have any interest in blood pressure, know that that's high blood pressure. Okay, it's over 130 and it's over 90 or approaching 90, over 80.
Right. So one size fits all really doesn't work very well in the monitor, the blood pressure cuff size.
Or anything in life, right, Richard? We're both big guys. One size doesn't fit all.
That's right. But if you're trying to use that cuff, you're going to get a wrong reading. And if you use that reading at the doctor's office, you take that information to the doctor, and the doctor prescribes you medications based on that, that's not going to be appropriate. Now, here's what they found. Even though they got a 143 over 86 average for somebody who needed a larger cuff, when they used that larger cuff, they were 124 over 79. So what does that do? That completely eliminates the high blood pressure issue. 124 over 79 is not high blood pressure.
No.
So that would be a real indicator if you're up there in those numbers. Now, if we're checking our own blood pressure at home using one of those automatic cuffs,
That we purchase at the pharmacy?
Yeah, you can buy them anywhere.
Costco, anywhere.
The problem that you have with those cuffs is they only come in one size generally.
Yeah.
And from our own experiences, because we do a lot of blood pressures, finding just an extra large cuff can be as much as buying a whole unit. So most people don't do that.
Yeah.
The extra large cuff is just ridiculously expensive. So those are things to keep in mind.
Can you do the blood pressure anywhere else, like on your forearm, or does it have to be on the bicep?
So that's a great question. So there are wrist cuffs.
Okay.
They are not as accurate, but they're a good indication of changes. So if you have your baseline from the doctor using the correct cuff size, then you can check with your wrist cuff and kind of gauge about where the difference is and changes that are happening to your blood pressure.
Right. So, yeah, those wrist cuffs, while they're convenient, they aren't nearly as accurate. And so it's also important where you hold that wrist cuff. Because, and you can check this on yourself, no matter what kind of cuff you have, just adjust a little bit the height of where the cuff is to where your heart is. I've done that. If I put my arm all the way down low and have that cuff down kind of at the crook of my elbow, my blood pressure will be much higher than if I'm up with that blood pressure cuff over my bicep and my arm more in line with my heart. So you should really understand all these dynamics in order to get the information, because if you don't look at those things and understand them, why is my blood pressure higher right now? Well, am I sitting in a position where my blood pressure cuff is lower than my heart? It doesn't take much to make those adjustments and then get a much more accurate reading and be consistent in everything.
I just went to the doctor Monday, and my blood pressure was somewhat elevated, and I have not had blood pressure problems in my life. But I did notice as she was doing it, they usually grab the bigger sleeve. For me, they didn't. She grabbed the normal sleeve. And now I'm thinking that's probably exactly why.
Yeah, that's probably it. There's a number of things that can change the blood pressure reading. Half of adults in the United States have high blood pressure or hypertension. Mm-hmm. Half. That's a big number.
That must have something to do with our diet and exercise programs. if we have high blood pressure, then we need to do something about it. I don't know how much of that is misdiagnosed.
Well, and that's kind of the issue, right? More than 500,000 deaths in the United States had hypertension as a primary or contributing cause. Now, I would say that if it's a primary or contributing cause, then it's very real. You have high blood pressure. But if our cuffs are wrong and our readings are wrong, we're either going to come up with a low reading, which is not an indication, and so we're not treating it correctly, or we're going to come up with a high reading, and maybe we're treating something that we don't have. So again, being your own best medical advocate, Andy, next time you go in, reminder to grab the larger cuff. Remember, this is a terrible truth, but there's a nursing shortage right now. And we are using nurses, which is great. They have to get their experience, but I think they get less supervision when they initially go out, to see patients. They assume that they can do the easy things like the blood pressure and the weight and the temperature and all of that. But perhaps that because they're new in the office, maybe they don't realize the significant changes that a cold room can make, or talking while they're taking your blood pressure, or using the wrong cuff.
Well, and that using the wrong cuff, that was less than a 1 second thought process for that mm-hmm. person, and they may have just not thought that one
yeah,
second.
Yeah, just not even thought it through.
And yet, 40% of them almost are wrong if they use the wrong. I mean, that's amazing. That's a game changer.
It really is.
So you need to take that into account and be your own best medical advocate. Just be aware, if they're taking that cuff that's not the right size, go ahead and just have a friendly conversation and say, hey, should I be using a bigger cuff than that? And they may say, yeah, you're probably right. Let's try this other cuff. Don't make them feel bad about the decision. Help them make a better one.
You dummy. No, you don't want to do that.
That's right. You're not going to get better results from that argument just before you have a blood pressure test. So, yeah, just be aware and be involved so that you can help people get better answers to questions. But there are some other things that we thought were kind of interesting. This study points out there are 10 tips for accurate readings, and some of those are obvious, some of them not. Use the right cuff. That's obviously on the top of the list for this. But don't put the cuff over your clothing. Now, a lot of us get that done over our clothing, and it doesn't make it absolutely wrong. It makes it a little less accurate.
A little less accurate.
Well, in this time of year, we tend to wear long sleeves, right?
That's right.
So they're not going to tell you to roll up your sleeve, usually.
Right. Yeah, and rolling it up is only going to put it right in the way. Right.
Yeah, true.
And so it's really take your shirt off, and that's an inconvenience. But if we are concerned, then we should probably go through that inconvenience to make sure that we get the right information. And then here's another one that I know we don't do, and that is to relax for 3 to 5 minutes before taking the reading.
By the way, that's relaxing without talking. It gives you a chance to completely decompress and have deep breaths.
In that sitting position, in a supported, comfortable sitting position. So if you aren't sitting down and comfortable waiting for your blood pressure test, then your blood pressure is probably going to be a little higher. Mm-hmm. So wait that 3 to 5 minutes, and you know, sitting at home, I went through this just to try it out. And that is like brushing your teeth for 2 minutes. If you're not used to brushing your teeth for 2 minutes, 2 minutes is forever. Well, 3 to 5 minutes of just sitting is an eternity.
Did you have your phone out at least?
No, you can't do that because the things I end up watching usually have an effect on me.
Yeah. High blood pressure.
Right. That's right. Raises your anxiety.
So sit in a comfortable chair, uncross your feet. Little things. Don't have them dangling because that'll raise your blood pressure. Make sure your back and arm are supported. Now, if your arm, and this is the point that I made, if my arm's just dangling to the side and I'm taking my blood pressure, then I'm lower than my heart.
Wow.
And I was trying to figure out a place that I could do that. I was sitting on my bed and I had to stack some pillows up, you know, beside me to kind of hold that up. But when I did, my blood pressure was lower on that test. So without a doubt, those are some things we should do. No talking. Smoking, if you smoke, don't do it for 30 minutes before. Drinking alcohol, don't do that for 30 minutes before, or caffeine.
Right, no coffee at least 30 minutes before a reading.
Right. And then here's a couple others, of course. The cold room issue. When our bodies are in a cold room, we end up having higher blood pressure. So,
every hospital and doctor's office is freezing.
I was going to say, that seems like that happens all the time.
Yeah. And so then the last one they had on the list was go to the bathroom before. Because a full bladder will change your blood pressure.
Did you know a full bladder would increase your blood pressure?
Make your blood pressure go up. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. So I had a full bladder at the doctor's office the other day.
I was diagnosed with hypertension because I had to pee.
Yeah.
So here's a fact, some statistics that I thought was interesting. So I'm going to quote this. In our study, the overestimation of blood pressure due to using a cuff that is too small misclassified 39% of participants as being hypertensive, while the underestimation of blood pressure due to using a cuff that is too large missed 22% of participants with hypertension.
So these are just things we want you to know, and hopefully that will change your health in a positive way.
Yeah.
So we're happy to do that. So we only have a few minutes left, and we had a couple other studies. We'll save one for later, and we'll just talk about this one really quick because I thought this was interesting and doable, and I think that's the important part. Strength training for 30 minutes has a drastic impact on our life expectancy. Strength training can reduce our death rate by 20%. Now, that strength training doesn't have to be going into the gym and working out for an hour and a half every day and drinking protein shakes and raw eggs, right? So that's not what it was. This study, and I think this is the important part, this study determined that between 30 and 60 minutes a week is ideal, because when they did the study, they found that those people who worked out that much had a vast improvement, but that the improvement tapered off if we went above 60 minutes.
What? Really?
Really. So 30 to 60 minutes. Now that's an attainable goal, right?
That is. Even I could do 30 to 60 minutes a week.
strength training, whether that's using elastic bands or weights, and you don't have to have a huge weight gym to do that. And you don't have to exercise every muscle. It's not necessary that we have this full body workout, but that we are working on. Now, any body muscle that we do create does increase our likelihood to use calories, which does have some impact on weight loss. So I think that's a valuable part of this. So it's really interesting and important to consider that these are accomplishable tasks, not Herculean. 30 minutes. If you just had, you know, a couple of large cans and were doing some bicep curls in the kitchen while you were doing something else, then that would be something. Doing some deep knee bends if you can, or as much of a deep knee bend as you can.
Because if you're making cookies while you're working out and then eating the dough, that probably defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah, cookies better than cake because the dough is heavier, right?
That's right.
that's exactly it. If we just try and integrate that in, some strength exercises. Now, aerobic exercise is great. This study, this was actually a review of a bunch of studies. And most of the studies talked about cardio activities, you know, walking and getting your heart rate up and doing those kind of things. What they did was they gleaned out some information from the study, from those studies, and said, well, yes, that all has value, but 30 to 60 minutes of strength training showed some significant improvements, whereas the cardio, if you add that on, that makes things better. Now, the cardio, if you go for a walk every day, and that's where you're looking at 150 minutes of cardio, was kind of their sweet spot. But the 30 to 60 minutes on weight training was important. So if you're not doing anything like me, and I had a choice between walking for an hour and a half every night or figuring out some time in the week that I could spend 30 to 60 minutes, I think I'd accomplish the 30 to 60 minutes. And hopefully, if I accomplish that 30 to 60 minutes in a few months, I would probably say, okay, I could probably do some walking too.
Yeah.
That would be my...
I guess the bottom line on that is 30 minutes of strength training per week is enough to significantly reduce the risk of death from many causes. That's pretty significant. When we can all find 30 minutes throughout a week to do some strength training.
So there's a couple other things. They were doing the study to find out if it had any effect on cancer. And they didn't find that strength training had any specific help in bowel, kidney, bladder, or pancreatic cancer. But it didn't adversely affect it either. So while that's not necessarily an upside, we know that, according to this, that there isn't a downside to it.
And it does help your mental,
right.
The feeling of euphoria that you get when you exercise.
Right. But for all those people who did, whether they had cancer or not, they still increased their likelihood of living by a significant portion. And again, that 20% is amazing. Now, if you mix the strength training with cardio, we get it to 40%. And I think
those are
huge numbers. Those are worth working towards. And again, this is an accomplishable goal. So that's kind of the interesting part. So we are always looking for information that we think is valuable for people. And anybody who has any questions or concerns or things you think you'd like to have us talk about on the radio, we would love to have that call. If you have a question about your own health care or about somebody you love, give us a call. We would love to talk to you about it. That telephone number is 435-477-6999. And it's Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. We just, it's really great that we have this opportunity, and we really appreciate the support that we get from people who call us and thank us for doing this and give us some information that helps them. And we are truly blessed when we have the opportunity to help somebody in that time of need.
For those of you that don't want to make the call or want to, you know, have the question come up at 2:00 in the morning, feel free to go onto our website and you can shoot us an email. Our website is pathwayhospicecare.com. It'll tell you a little bit more about us, and it's a place where you can send us your questions.
Yeah, and we would love to take those calls and answer those questions, and we would encourage everybody to encourage other people to listen to the radio program and maybe get some information for themselves. Because as you listen to this, we hope you become experts for the people you know, that they will feel comfortable asking you questions.
And always remember, be your own best medical advocate. Thanks for being here, everyone. See you next week, or I'll talk to you next week.